Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We speak in this atmosphere and we say, let there be light. This month we're talking about wholeness. My actual title is You Are Here, Finding Wholeness in a Fractured World. This is part two of it. I want to show you this scripture about wholeness. I'm going to show you out of the book of James. James, of course, is called the Proverbs of the New Testament. James was actually the half-brother of Jesus and just has some insights. There's a really different energy in James than there even is in the Pauline epistles. But I want to actually use the original 1611 King James Version, which is rare for me, but I want to show you what he says here. This is chapter 1, verses 2, 3, and 4. And he says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. In other words, that you can be whole. The reason I wanted to use the Elizabethan English here is the translators that James, the King of England, assembled to do this translation, which is not, there is no authorized translation. That's bogus. Unless you lived in England in the 17th century, it is not, unless James was your king, it's not authorized for you. It is a beautiful work. And as I always say, I use a lot of translations, but I normally, just to give you a reference point, will quote out of King James first, just so you kind of know what I'm talking about. The reason I wanted to use the original archaic language here is because these translators, I think there was about 59 of them, and they were probably the top linguists of their era, but they chose to ascribe a female pronoun to patience, and they said the patience was feminine. Let patience have her perfect work. Now, if you look in the New King James, it goes to it. Let patience have its perfect work. But I wanted to, and all the other translations say something along those lines. I'm going to show it to you in two other versions. But I wanted to bring out the 1611 version because of what I taught last year. Remember I taught about Sophia wisdom and how that wisdom is the feminine side of God, and we killed a lot of sacred cows with that, because a lot of Western Christianity is extremely patriarchal, and a lot of the Bible is patriarchal. I mean, even the sign of the covenant that Abraham started, women can't even do it. It's like you're not even anatomically equipped to get into the covenant through circumcision. So it's no wonder that the Abrahamic religions became such a boys' club. And, you know, we've talked before about how even in the Gospels, all the men were named, and practically none of the women were. You know all of the apostles' names, but it was the woman at the well, the woman with the issue of blood, the woman caught in adultery. And these women weren't even ascribed names. I think I was watching it happen in Brooklyn this morning with Frank Sinatra as I'm saying important. It's important to rightly divide the scriptures and understand that the Bible was written by men to men. And I like to, because reconciliation is my thing, I always want to bring everybody to the table. I want to show God was not a sexist. These were men who were writing with the limitations of their mindset in their culture. Now, having said that, let me show you what this verse is really about. Wrong information creates wrong reality. If you believe something wrong, it's going to produce it's going to manifest something wrong in your life. It's not just truth that manifests. Everything manifests eventually. When you hear something incorrectly and you believe it incorrectly, you create your reality through that paradigm. That's why Jesus said, you'll know the truth and the truth will make you free. It's not the truth that makes you free. It's the truth that you know that makes you free. So if you don't know it, you know, the scripture says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. So you can be all around it, but if you don't actually have the knowledge, I mean, knowledge really is power. Like, let me give you an example. I know for some of you, when we started doing Year of Living Your Best Life, I started encouraging you to post pictures with the hashtag. And a lot of people, that was new for them. And I explained it this way. I said, a hashtag is like a phone number. You have to get the letters right, because it would be like somebody dialing you with your phone number and using a 6 instead of a 7. You're not going to make the connection, even though the other digits are correct. And I actually kind of started a new one this year. I did hashtag YOL, whatever, Year of Living Your Best Life 17, just to kind of, it puts it all in one place. And once you understand how hashtags work, they're great, because they really sort of bring things together, and it's easy to find the material. But you can have nearly all the digits right, but if you don't have that one digit, you can't get the truth. Last year, give you an example. Marshall and Corey had bought tickets to the Dolly Parton concert. Well, I think you had a gig, so they were wanting to sell the tickets. Well, I'd always wanted to see Dolly Parton, so I said, well, I'll buy them from you. That's great. And so they had a printout. Corey had a printout. I guess you gotten it over the computer and printout. You know, you go and there's a barcode, whatever. Well, I didn't even notice that on the printout, the last digit of our seat numbers didn't show up. So we could get into the place. That was no problem. But finding our seats was a little bit of a problem. And they were out at some place where they didn't have phone service, whatever. So I'm texting her like, Can you look on your phone and see what the seats numbers were? So what we actually had to do is, by the process of elimination, we went into our section and moved 14 times. Because every time we would sit down, we'd say, well, I hope this is it. I don't know. Is that a 7 or is that an 8? I can't tell. Somebody would come say, I think you're in our seats. We probably are. And we moved and we moved and we moved until finally there were 2 seats left. In that whole section, I said, this must be the ones. And sure enough, we got there, and by that time, her exact words was, when I finally saw your text, I nearly threw up. I said, well, it's not your fault. I didn't notice it either. But I thought, just that little bit of, there was no dispute over whether we could get into the place. That was no, we walked right in there. But if you don't have the full information, I still would have never seen the concert if we hadn't figured out, well, we're just going to keep till everything fills in, whatever the 2 that are left over, those will be our seats. And they were. What it's done is made me more aware. Next time I do that, make sure I check it out. And, you know, even last month we went to New York, I had searched for the best airfare, found a really good deal. I'd spent a lot of time online working it out. Finally, he's like, are you ready? Okay, send. Bought it. Get the email confirmation. I thought I was buying 8 a.m. I had bought 8 p.m. I thought, how did I possibly do that? I'm sitting here looking at this thing. You know how it is when you, before you hit the send, you're like, let me make sure. You fly into Newark. Arrives. Okay, that's right, right? Okay. P.M. What? And there's like a $200 charge to get it changed. And I was on the phone with a guy a long time. I said, please, Chase, I didn't. And he worked with me. And it wasn't quite that much. But still, what it taught me is, next time you buy tickets, before you hit send, make sure you see that A and not that B, because you think you got the whole thing, but you don't have the whole thing. And just that one little wrong thing would have totally made us miss the flight. It would have made us miss an entire day. Even, if I can just extend this metaphor, if that didn't convince you, let me tell you this. Because it was an early flight, I thought, you know, I'm gonna drive down to the. I don't live that far from the airport, so I'm gonna drive down there and let me go ahead and get our boarding passes and everything, because sometimes even when you go to those little kiosks, there's a long line, and I know what it's like in the morning when you're going through traffic and every 2 minutes is an issue. So I thought, well, I'm gonna go ahead and get this done. So the Delta guy comes up to me. He says, "What do you?" He said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yeah, I've got a flight in the morning. I'm just gonna go ahead and print out my boarding passes." He said, "You can't do that." And I said, "Yeah, you like 24 hours before." He said, "No, these machines aren't equipped to do that." And I said, "Are you sure?" I said, "I'm pretty sure I've done this before." And he said, "No, you can't." I mean, he just was not going to let me go to the kiosk. So I thought, I ain't getting back in this car. You know how I am. As God is my witness, I am leaving this place with some boarding passes. So I just went over to the Starbucks and got a coffee and waited till he was talking to somebody. Had his back turned. I walked over, went to the thing, printed them right out. I was like, whatever. But I could have taken his word for it and left or whatever. So again, my point is you can have a little bit of the truth, but if you don't have all of the truth, you're not going to have a full manifestation. I'm saying that to say that when people have misheard the scriptures, they're operating on a truth that doesn't fully exist. Now this week, and I would say this very carefully in case these friends of mine from Nashville are watching, because I had a lovely lunch with both of them. But these are some people that are kind of new to the way that I teach, and wanted to ask me some questions about a lot of things, one of them especially. And with some of the questions, I finally said, I met him for lunch, I said, to answer everything that you're asking me would take about 50 lunches for me to explain all this to you. I said, let me tell you where my YouTube page is, and you can go through this. But in the conversation, this person was telling me, he said, my mom's 83 years old, and she wants to walk on streets of gold, and she wants to see gates of pearl. And we went to church recently where the guy was trying to talk her out of that. And she said, I'm getting my streets of gold, whatever. He said, do you not believe in that? I said, this is what I believe. I don't need a city. I love God. If God's in a city, that's fine. But honestly, streets of gold is not a huge incentive for me. I do believe I came from God. I will go back to God. I said, however, I think that young minister was out of line trying to talk an 83-year-old woman out of her image of streets of gold. If that's what she's looking for, then don't take that away from her. And I'm not even saying that wouldn't, you know, that's not a possibility. What I know about the scriptures is that when John had his, when he wrote the, it's apocalypsis, it means the revelation of Christ. And when he wrote it, it was all an allegory about a vision that he had when he was on the Isle of Patmos. So the rule of hermeneutics is, if part of it is allegorical, all of it is allegorical. So if we don't believe in a literal seven-headed dragon coming up out of the sea, like chapter 7, then we believe that when he saw streets of gold and gates of pearl, that it was symbolic as well. And I was explaining to him about the pearl and the oyster and how fire purifies the gold and all that kind of stuff. And he said, actually, that makes more sense to me, but are you saying you don't believe in heaven? I said, again, missing the point. I don't need a city. I just love God. And he said, but what about my mansion being built? I said, well, again, not in the original language. It was Jesus saying to Peter, you're going to deny me 3 times, but let not your heart be troubled. In my house is still a room for you. That's what the word mansion was, not in the original language. However, I understand that 10,000 gospel songs have been written about mansions. And if that's what people believe, it's fine. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I went over and spent the evening with Donnie and Reba and Bremen, and they opened with Build My Mansion Next Door to Jesus because they're doing Dottie songs. And I sat there and sang along with them. Just build my mansion next door to Jesus. Although I know this isn't scriptural, I understand that it's a part of our knowledge of the way we interpreted the Bible. And because I'm from the Bible Belt and I have a history like you guys have, I have a soulish connection with it as well. So build my mansion next to the throne. So, I adored Donnie Rambo. I'm just saying that was a song that was written with some misinformation that can affect you negatively if, like, did you ever hear the phrase, don't be so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good? Well, I grew up with people that I think were so heavenly minded. It never occurred to them to do anything for the earth because we were just waiting for the earth to burn up and we were looking for an escape route. We were looking for the fire escape, not trying to fix it. That's why when people, even like my uncle, Bishop Polk, when he came along and started saying, well, the kingdom message is about making the world a better place, that was considered just really controversial because Pentecostals didn't believe in making the world better. We believed this world is horrible, and that's why God's waiting to destroy it, and we're out of here, and everybody else is going to hell. Even the other Pentecostals that don't interpret the scriptures the way that we do. Us Trinitarians thought you oneness people were going to hell, and y'all thought we were going to hell, and we all spoke in tongues. Speaking in tongues in hell. He said, we spoke in the devil's tongue. Well, there you have it. Now, I'm saying that. What's this got to do with Count It All Joy? All right, have you ever heard somebody say, well, I'm going through a lot right now, but the Bible says God won't put on us more than we can bear. Have you ever heard that? It's right there next to God helps those who help themselves, and cleanliness is next to godliness, and the Lord moves in mysterious ways as wonders to perform, none of which are in the scriptures. Well, God helps those who help themselves is implied. That is implicit in the scriptures. But this idea about God won't put on us more than we can bear, let me give you some clarity about this so that we can talk about wholeness. That is a misquote of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 30, where Paul said, in the King James, he says, there is no temptation taken you that is not common to man, but God will with the temptation make a way of escape that you'll be able to bear it. What he was saying is, there's nothing new under the sun, and stuff just happens, life happens, but with everything that happens, God will give you a way of escape to deal with it. That's all he was saying. And that makes sense. I mean, life happens, right? One day was last week. Frances texted me to check on me because I was going through issues. And she was like, you had a neighbor die, and her sister just got a very negative report. And so we're texting each other back with, well, let me tell you what just happened. You know, and we weren't being sarcastic. It's just like, yeah. She said, it's just life. I said, exactly. It's just stuff that happens. It's not God or the devil. I mean, it really is people and the choices they've made and the way they see the world. And I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying it's just the way that it is. And if you think, well, God won't put on me more than I can bear, if you think about that, that's really kind of a horrible idea of God. You know what it makes me think of? So, I don't know if it was Hasbro or Milton Bradley. One of these toy makers back in the 60s had a game called, I don't remember the name of it, but it was like the straw that breaks the camel's back. Do you remember what I'm talking about? And it had a little plastic camel. Huh? The Last Straw, yes. And you had a little plastic camel, and the way that it would work is you kept adding straws until finally there would be the one that just pushed it over the edge, and the camel, his feet went out from under him, and that's how the other person won. And that's what I always pictured when people would say, God won't put on you more than you can bear. It would be like, you know, God says, let me give you cancer. And you're like, whoa. Even back in the 60s, there was a song, This Time, Lord, You Gave Me a mountain that I couldn't climb. It was talking about all these horrible things I've gone through, but this time, God, You gave me something I just can't deal with. And that God's this cosmic puppeteer who's going, no, I think you could take a little bit more. I'm going to make your husband cheat on you. Okay, how about that? And let me see. How about one of your kids is on drugs? Okay, can you handle that? You're like, whoa, I don't know, God. The cancer and the infidelity was bad, but I don't know. And God's like, I think you could take a little more. I think you could take. That's just something about that's a little creepy to me, that God's just seeing how far can I take you to the edge before you break. Now, I do believe in the idea of, you know, we've all been there where when it rains, it pours, and there'll be this one last thing that happens. You're like, oh, I'm not just through. I'm through. Thoo. Like, that was it. You know how when you're already having kind of a bad day and this one last thing happened, you're like, mm-mm, don't even. Or who, last time I mentioned this, somebody, I was thinking it was Roz that had said this back when we were at Virginia Highland Church, but it was one night we'd had a late event. Might have been you. I don't remember. I can't remember who said it, but not that it was a dangerous neighborhood, but when ladies used to walk out, I would, if I didn't walk in the car, I'd make sure somebody did. I just the pastor and me. And so they were walking out. I said, well, let me walk you to your car. I think it was you, Rod said, as bad as my feet hurt tonight, I wish somebody would come up and try to start something with me. And I was like, she's like, we're good. Trust me. Somebody comes up on this sidewalk trying to start with me, he'll wish he hadn't. I was like, got it. But I know what she meant. I know, you know, you're that moment, you're like, oh, that was the thing that pushed it over. And unfortunately, sometimes it goes really negative. You know what I mean? That's when, you know, somebody shoots somebody or whatever. It's like there's the thing that pushes somebody over the edge. That's one reason, not that I'm given to road rage anyway, but that's one reason I don't, like, if somebody cuts me off in traffic or whatever, I don't make a big deal about it, because you don't know if some crazy person's in the next lane that you were the, you know what I mean? They already went through a thing and you were the thing that pushed it over the edge and they're going to take it. Like, I don't want to be your last straw. If anything, I want to make things better for you. I'm like, you know, it's all good. God, you know, God's got you. Anyway, if you believe that God won't put on you more than you can bear, then you have this idea that things are so out of your control that God's just working something out. Now, let me tell you, I do believe in the idea of all things working together for good. I completely believe that. And I believe that everything ultimately can be a blessing, which is really what James is talking about here. He's not saying, when he says count it all joy when divers temptations, that's an Elizabethan way of saying when a lot of crap happens in your life, be joyful about it. Now, that's frankly an insane idea. I mean, I've never, in 45 years of ministry, I've never had anybody make an appointment with me and say, I have just got to tell you about all that has happened to me lately. It was a heart attack last week, and this week, my dog ran away, got run over by a car. It's awesome. We are counting it all joy. I mean, I've never heard that. People are always just the opposite. What he's talking about here is big picture. To make my point even further, because I don't want to ever teach you something that I don't practice myself. And I could tell you this. I've been through some ups and downs in my life. You know, when they sing those, for every mountain you've brought me over. I mean, I will always be on my feet standing up singing that song because I feel that. Like, yes, I have been through some mountains and some valleys, as we all have. It's just life. Jesus says it rains on the just and the unjust. But when the negative things have happened, it has never, or even the things that appear to be negative, it has never, ever occurred to me to say, God, why are you letting this happen? I've never thought that way. I've never thought about blaming God. I've just never thought that way. I've just thought, well, you know, here's a thing that's happened, and if I've played a role in it, I'll own it, not to just tear myself down, but to so I know how to fix it. Because if I don't diagnose the problem, I'm just going to keep recreating it. So, what can I learn from this? And you know, you got to put on your big boy pants to think that way. In this same conversation that we had, one of these gentlemen said, well, I know there's a devil that steals, kills, and destroys, and he's walking around seeking whom he may devour. And he said, do you not believe in that? You don't believe in the devil? I said, well, it's not that I don't want to say it like that, but I explained to him what John 10:10 actually said. And I said, even when Jesus, when you read in the Aramaic, when Jesus was in the Mount of Temptation, he was really speaking to his own thoughts. It wasn't some entity. And he referred to his thoughts as Satana and whatever. I said, I know this sounds, I'm not trying to rock your theological world. I'm just saying that a lot of us, if we don't know better, we think that the negative things that are happening are the devil or spiritual warfare. And I said, I can just tell you this. I haven't had spiritual warfare in years. I mean, I opted out of that system a long time ago. That doesn't mean everything's been perfect in my life, but I don't have a consciousness that something's fighting me all the time. I just don't. Even if I believed in absolute old school literal devil, I still wouldn't give him that much credit. Even if I thought he was doing everything, I thought, I'm not going to give it up. I'm not going to give you that much power. I'm still not going to say that you did this to me. I'll just to show you, I'll say I did it to myself just because I don't want to empower you. And he totally received it. He said, wow, I never thought of that before. I said, well, we've all been, if you came from a similar background from me, you've been very conditioned to think that way, that all the bad stuff came from the devil and all the good stuff came from God. And when I was growing up, I heard more people fixate on the bad stuff. Wednesday night, we always had testimony meeting. Y'all pray for me because the devil's been after me all week. And the enemy knows if he could just. I heard so much exaltation of the enemy. First time I ever heard somebody go into a Satanist church, I'm like, y'all have never glorified the devil like a Pentecostal church has. Like, y'all don't even know. Y'all think you worship the devil. You come to Wednesday night meeting in an old school Pentecostal church. They know how to worship them some devil. You will hear Jesus mentioned a couple of times, but you will hear devil and enemy every other breath. They are literally obsessed with it. And because that's their paradigm, they keep creating things for themselves that they perceive as spiritual warfare. And so the spiritual warfare really is between their ears. Now, again, I'm not saying that I just sail through life and everything's la, 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 everything's perfect. I just believe that it's just life and that I have creative ability because I'm made in the image of God. So I am creating my reality. And I don't have grandiose ideas that I can create the entire world, but I can create the world that I live in. And if you're going to be in my world, you will have to get in. You'll have to be pulled into my vortex, which says mine's always going to move me toward wholeness, which is exactly what he's saying here. Let me show you this in the message, same passage. He says, consider it a sheer gift, friends, when tests and challenges come at you from all sides. Well, Bishop, you just said it's not God testing us. It's life testing us. Don't you understand? This is a very practical statement. He's saying life will put you to the test. Come at you from all sides. Anybody ever felt that way? You're like, dear Lord, it's coming from every flipping direction. What the heck? I mean, you're lying if you never felt that way. You know that under pressure, your faith life is forced into the open and shows its true colors. So don't try to get out of anything prematurely. What? That's where in the King James is, let patience have her perfect work. In other words, he's saying, stop trying to resist it, learn from it, let it run its course, push back, but also realize that In the long run, this is going to be a gift. Remember when, what's his name, the country star that sang the song Live Like You Were Dying? Tim McGraw. The point of that was, the writer of that song says, when I got a death sentence over my life, it made me reevaluate my life and start appreciating it more. Well, I don't think everybody, I understand what he's saying. I don't think everybody should try to go to the doctor and say, tell me how long have I got, doc? But the point is, sometimes, you know, haven't you ever had that near miss experience on 285, that 18-wheeler nearly ran over you, and you realize how close you came, and as soon as you see somebody that you love, you burst into tears because you're like, oh, my God, this could have been so bad. And you think about, what in the world would y'all be going through with that trial? Ooh, I just been 2 seconds later. Y'all be planning my funeral right now. And you know, we've all had that awakening where suddenly you're like, oh, the sky is so blue. Because you suddenly think, I could have possibly never seen the blue sky again. So it forces you to have a paradigm shift. And in some way, that's really what he's saying. He says, let everything that comes along, go ahead and feel it. Go ahead and experience it. Go ahead and, you know, let the snake bite you and then shake the snake off like Paul did on the island of Melita. He says, so don't try to get out of anything prematurely. Let it do its work so you become mature and well-developed, not deficient in any way. Now, that makes total sense to me. That's not saying God's not going to put on you more than you can bear. Let me tell you what. You know what that creates? Martyr complex. And I have learned this over the years. Remember when I did that teaching years ago about lists? Always notice your list people. Like the people that every time you talk to them, they'll tell you the last horrible 5 things that happened. Watch and see if the next time you talk to them, there weren't 8 things on it. And the next thing you're like, well, how's everything going? Oh, my God, you thought it was bad last week. It's even worse this week. You better watch that list, because once you create that list, the list itself becomes attractive, which is why you need to give a good report, because it works in the positive as well. Oh, my God, let me tell you what just happened. If you thought it was great last week, this week, 3 more great things happened. Now, that doesn't mean the other stuff isn't happening. It just means that you're focusing on the good stuff. And as I tell you all the time, the more you praise your life, the more you talk it up, you attract more good things. Let me tell you what will not work. God, don't you see how bad it is for me down here? I wish you could hear my moaning and my groaning. I promise you, it don't do jack. It just gets you a lot of attention. Am I being too harsh? I'm just saying it doesn't work. And I'm not saying people aren't going through some serious stuff. I'm not saying, but believe me, somebody some time ago said, you know, you're not in touch with suffering people. I said, are you kidding me? Let me show you my text and inbox messages in the course of a week. The majority of messages I get are people in crisis telling me that's the majority of the conversations I have in a day are people coming to me telling me about crisis in their life. This has happened several times in the last couple of weeks, where, you know, social media reveals so much about somebody. And there's some people I'm like, you know, I'm going to have to just unfriend them because I just am tired of looking at this stuff. God almighty. And then the next day you get an inbox from them like, I have a need. I need you to pray for. You know, you're the only one I can pray that's going to pray the prayer of faith. And you're like, okay, I was just about to unfriend and block you, but. Okay. It'd be so much easier for me to be in agreement with you if you'd stop putting all that crap on your feed. But I'm just saying. That's why I try to keep it. When they go low, we go high. I mean, I try to keep it up high. Lord, lift us up where we. Because you have to be there for everybody, even when you disagree with them. And I disagree with a lot. But somehow I pray the prayer of faith, and it gets results. I hear them back from like, oh, my God, the prayer changed everything. I'm like, good. Hope it changes a few more things. This says, go ahead and feel it. Go ahead and experience it. I think sometimes I maybe talk about my past upbringing in the church more negatively than I should, because a lot of positive was in it too. What I didn't like And I'm not saying this came from my dad. I'm saying this came from just the world we were in. There was so much about escape mentality. You know, the world's being destroyed. We got to get out of here. I got to get out. The house is burning down. Show me the way out. Scripture says, through much tribulation, we enter the kingdom. The kingdom suffers violence. The violent take it by force. In other words, it's pressing through the hardships and getting out on the other side that causes you to become whole. Let me show it to you one more translation. This is out of the Phillips. J.B. Phillips came out, I think, sometime in the 40s or early 50s, and it's a beautiful translation. It says, when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brothers, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends.
What?
Realize that they come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance. But let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find you have become men of mature character with the right sort of, and I love this word, independence. In other words, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. His grace has brought me safe this far. His grace will bring me home. You're not in a place of blaming God or the devil. You're just saying, I've had some stuff to deal with. I got through it. I came out stronger on the other side. I came through the fire without the smell of smoke in my clothes. And as Mahalia Jackson sang, I look back over my life and wonder how I got over. I mean, it is an amazing thing. I don't know how I did it. But apparently, there is a God who is helping me through it, and I was much stronger than I realized I was, and I didn't even know I was that strong until the thing happened, so it came and put me to the test, and I didn't become victimized by it. I pushed back. I decided to live and not die. I decided to overcome. I decided to become greater from it. I decided to learn a lesson from it, so I came out of it stronger. Did I like that it happened? Not necessarily. Am I glad that it happened on the other side? Yeah, because now I know what I'm made out of, and now basically I'm bulletproof. Listen, this should have happened to most of you, and if it hasn't, you need to get a grip on this. I'm not saying that for the rest of your life everything's going to be perfect, but you should have gotten to a place by now that you've overcome enough stuff that you're not just easily disoriented by the next thing that comes along. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you should have won enough fights by now that when the next one comes along, you're like, let's go. You want some of this? Let's go. If you don't start, nothing ain't going to be nothing. But if you're going to go after me, I'm going to fight. And my track record is I'm going to win. I've overcome the lion and the bear. And if this is a giant, then I will deal with the giant. Is it scary? Maybe. But I don't even stop and ask if I'm scared. I just come out swinging because I win. Now, if you learn that, you're good for the rest of your life. No matter what happens, you're like, yeah, I'm good. You know, you might once in a while say, I need, you know how like, this is how I see prayer and agreement. Even he's opened up this morning with, it's not my brother, my sister, it's me. Or that's, we can all relate to that. Like, there's times when you're like, I need prayer today. We all get it. Believe me, with all three of our parents, serious stuff all happened to them like the same week. And we're still kind of in the middle of it. And I would be lying if I said there hadn't been a few conversations that we've had that we both got a little emotional. Like, what's going on? I can deal with one or two things, but not three major things at once. And we've had to encourage ourselves, like, well, we're going to handle this, we're going to get through it, and we will, and everything will be okay. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said there has been a few times it's felt a little overwhelming. Let me tell you what prayer is for. When Rocky's in the ring, he goes and sits in that little stool in the side, and he gets a rest between rounds. And you need those guys that are there, you know, cut me, Mick, you know, the guy that cut, like, oh my God, I can't believe Burgess Meredith just cut his eye. But you need some people there in the corner that will say, you got this, get out there. They throw some water on you, give you what, you know what I mean? You need that little entourage of people around you saying, be strong. So, but you're going to have to get back up there and fight. You understand? So that's what you need. That's why you need some positive people in your life. What you don't need is when you've just gone a couple of rounds and your face, your eyes are all swollen up, you don't need somebody going, well, the Lord won't put on you more than you can bear. Like, I need you to get up out of this ring. I need somebody that's going to throw some water on me and maybe give me some pointers or whatever. You know, say you're swinging too much with your right or you need to duck more, whatever, fine. But don't stand here and say, God's got a plan. Like, I got a plan for you. I got a plan for your butt right now, and it's out of here. That's my plan. I need to get him up out of my space. But you also don't need people to just say, la, la, la. You don't have to worry. No, you got to go in there, and you're going to take a couple of punches. You understand? That's why, if I could just continue the boxing metaphor here. It's always amazing to me when a guy has just lost and he's all, you know, his face is all swelling up and he's humiliated and bleeding. And there's always somebody going, tell me, how do you feel right now? And you're like, well, how do you think I feel? I just got the bejesus beaten out of me and lost $13 million. That's so positive right now. Maybe check back with me in a couple of weeks. What do you think? I know I shouldn't say this. It was a part of me just sometimes wants to see the guy haul off and hit the reporter and just say, really? Let me tell you how I feel. It feels like this. How's that feel? It kind of gives you an idea. But you don't want people that are in denial saying, oh, you got this. You just have to stand there. Just stand there. No, you don't stand there. You've still got to swing. But you also need people to say, you got this. You can win this. Whatever. That's what agreement is. Ecclesiastes 4 says, two are better than one, for if one falls, the other will lift up his fellow. That's why you need people. Could you stay at home and just... You could stay at home and stream and listen to tapes or whatever. You don't have to go to church to know God. Let me tell you why it helps to know some people. You need some people that kind of understand what your life is, that you don't have to go into a lot of detail with. You know what I mean? You need those quick text people that say, I just need to tell you, I'm in the emergency room. Don't have time to talk about it. Need some prayer and agreement. And you need somebody that's not just dismissive who will say, praying, got it, whatever. I mean, I'm telling you, if you use social media for that, I'm all behind that. I do it myself. Ken does it. I understand that principle. And let me tell you, it works, and I feel it, and I've seen results from it. And I don't need a lot of detail. That's why some of you, when you text me, usually get very, I'm very bottom line. I'm very like, you know, I'm in agreement, stay strong, whatever. I hate when people are too wordy with me, and I'm not too wordy back. And if wordy is what you need, I'm not your guy. I'll be wordy when I'm holding a microphone, but I'm not wordy. This is when I'm wordy. My feeling is, if you didn't get it now, I can't tell it to you in a text. The text has got to be the amen to what I already said here. Back when I used to do more... I ain't all that thrilled about counseling, I got to tell you. Several people have talked to me about having an office again. I'm like, I don't really want an office. I mean, if you need to, I've met several of you at Starbucks. There's probably 13 people in here that I've met at Starbucks. I don't mind sitting down and having a coffee with you. We'll talk about it. I get that. That's no problem. There's something about that desk and that chair and that your 2 o'clock appointment is here. I'm like, especially when somebody sits and asks you something that's the very thing that you just taught on the day before, and you're like, if you just listen to what I just said, we wouldn't even have to have this conversation right now. Am I being too transparent? So when somebody plops down the chair and goes, where do I begin? I'm like, oh, I guess I'll begin at the beginning. I'm like, no, not the beginning. Let's get to the reason. Let's get to the reason why we're here. We don't have time to start at the beginning. Because I got a 3 o'clock and a 4 o'clock and a 5 o'clock, and they're all going to want to start at the beginning. It's not that I don't love people. If you don't know that I love people, you clearly have no idea who I am. I love people. I need people. I am not an isolationist. I want connection. I wouldn't be so visible on social media if I didn't want connection. I love to share my life, and you know, I love the connection with people. I truly do. But I also want to get myself included to the solution. I do believe there's a time where you just need to have somebody in your life that you can just vent to and let it all out. I believe that. I don't think you should do it every day with every person you meet. Because I'm going to tell you something. Can I help you out here? If you do that all the time, people are going to start dreading you. Because they're dealing with their own stuff. Do you know what I mean? And there's a point where they're going to say, you know, I kind of got my own plate full. So why don't we pick up our plates together? And walk with me to the sink and let's load this dishwasher. But my plate's a little too full to be fixing your plate right now. And again, I believe in talking it out, just not talking it out all the time. Because if you just keep saying it over and over again, you just hold yourself in that same cycle. You keep seeing it and speaking it and recreating it and seeing it and speaking it and recreating it, and you don't know, like, why am I trapped in this? Because you're not breaking your cycle. The scripture I started with last week was Jesus said, ask the man, do you want to be whole? And he doesn't say yes. He says, well, I've been here for 38 years, and I can't walk, and every time the water's troubled. And Jesus doesn't even get into his reality. Jesus says, take up your bed and walk. In other words, he introduces a completely different energy. Because as long as you're in that, in your story, let me tell you why it's important to be proactive. I know I'm saying a lot about my artwork, but this was just a lesson to me. I put it out there that I wanted to get a studio so I'd have space to, because it's messy. When you set up, it's messy, and I want to set up a place and leave it out and I have to clean up and put it away every time. That's too much hassle. Well, I start looking for studio space, and there's virtually none, and the stuff that is available, it's so expensive that it's laughable. Like, somebody tells you how much it is, you're like, no. Are you joking? That's what this ugly space that I have to share with somebody cost? Are you kidding? And clearly they're not kidding, because most of the space is already occupied, so somebody's paying for it. And I started to, for about 2 seconds, I started to get discouraged about it. I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a studio right here. Small as my loft is, I'm going to do it. How am I going to do it? You can't get those big pieces in your car. Well, I'm going to go rent a U-Haul it. I'm going to, oh, yeah, thanks. So I went and got a U-Haul it, got all the stuff together, put it all together. I thought, this is fine. I'm like, phew. I just got Netflix on Xfinity. I put on Andy Griffith Show or 30 Rock, and I'm painting. And it goes on for so long, it'll finally say, are you still watching the Andy Griffith Show? I'm like, yes, keep it going. I like hearing it in the background. Or yesterday it was 30 Rock. Such a funny show. You don't laugh at everything that they say, but there'll be this one line they say, like, oh my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. So I'm enjoying it. Well, then, now that I did this, then a studio actually does come available, to where I said, you know what, I think I will do it, but I just got set up here, so give me a little time. I'm going to produce some pieces here, and then when I start doing bigger stuff, I will need more space. But I thought, that's the principle is, you go ahead and do what you can with what you have to work with. You don't wait for the thing to happen. You make the thing happen. I'm telling you, nothing against prayer, but people are wasting too much time praying about stuff. Just do it. God's waiting for you to make a decision, and then he will bless the decision. And the decision doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect with it. This is my issue with Christians that are in this mindset. They think that there's this perfect will of God thing that they're looking for, and it's this elusive thing, and then they pursue it, and when everything's not perfect, they think they missed God. No, you're creating this whole drama in your head that's non-existent. Even if there is such a thing as the perfect will of God, and I can make a case for that, but even if there is that, case in point is the promised land. God specifically tells Moses, I want you to go in this land. 40 years in the wilderness. Wouldn't you think after 40 years, they would finally get back to Canaan, there'd be a big welcome sign, people would be passing out bottled waters, like, you guys have been 40 years, y'all come on in. Heck no. Joshua chapter 6, he brings back and he says, see, exclamation point, I have given you the city. Really? Because it looks exactly like it looked 40 years ago. You go read, it says Jericho, the King James says it was straightly shut up. No one came in, no one went out. In other words, nothing had changed in 40 years. So it would be easy to say, God, don't you see how long we've been in this desert? For 40 years. I mean, I know you won't put on me more than I can bear, but for 40 years, looks like you could come down and make this a little easier. And God's like, you know what? You're right. You convinced me. I'm going to come help you. No! God's like, what's your point? See, exclamation point. Only time in the Bible exclamation point is used. See, exclamation point, I have given you the city. Yeah, sure. Sure, I see that. Y'all see that, right? Don't anybody say you don't see it, because it's going to cost us another 40 years. Like, yeah, we see it. It's all good. Let's go. Let's go get Jericho. Y'all with me? Let's go. Let me tell you something. I know God. I've known him a long time. That's the way he thinks. So if you think after your 40 years in the wilderness, he's going to say, baby, I think you've suffered enough. No. He'll just say, see? I have given you this wonderful life. You're like, you sure have. When you say that, suddenly, I'm not saying you ain't going to fight, but you're going to fight and you're going to win and you're going to get into whatever your promised land is. But if this illusion that everything's going to be perfect because you're in the will of God, file that with unicorns and the tooth fairy and all these other things that are just figments of people's imaginations. They are things that people have made up to take personal responsibility off of their life. I remember this is someone who doesn't speak to me now and has me blocked on Facebook, so I don't know. I hear this person is engaged again to another marriage. But I remember after counseling, this is nobody you would know, so don't try to connect the dots. This person came to me and said, well, I think the reason we got a divorce is, you know, we went to some clubs and some places we shouldn't have gone, and we just gave place to the devil, and the devil just came in and destroyed our marriage. I'm like, well, nothing against the devil and all, but I kind of think it's because the whole time y'all were married, you didn't get a job, and she went out and worked every day. You stayed home and watched TV while she worked. So I think maybe that, like, you don't know, it's the devil. I'm like, maybe it was you. Buddy, people do not want to hear that. You have no compassion at all, block. I'm like, okay, fine, but I'm just going to tell you, in your next marriage, you might want to get a job. I mean, have all the devils you want. Knock yourself out. Y'all get you some demons. Go to as many clubs as you can, and you get you a truckload of demons. But I'm telling you, you're going to need a job. Because if she keeps working and you ain't working, I mean, I get it. I miss the devil myself. It was great just to have him as the whipping boy that you could blame everything on. I get it. And I'm hoping this marriage is going to work out for you, but I'm pretty sure the other one didn't break up because of the devil. Get a job. Da, 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 da. At least be trying. He said, Bishop, I'm unemployed. You're being insensitive. No, my feeling is if you're at least trying, then fine. I remember, I'm telling way too many stories, but this is when I first started the church. Years ago, and I was young. I mean, I was 26, 27 when I started the church. So I was, you think I'm outspoken now. I mean, I've been tempered. I'm mature now. I was just, back then, I just said anything. I still do. But this woman came to me and said, I don't know what to do. My husband, he won't work, can't work. And she said, I'm even okay with that if he would just help me with the kids. She said, I go to work every day. If he would just take care of the kids, I would be okay with just me working and supporting us. It's that he won't even do that. Like, I'm having to work and I'm having to find daycare and whatever. And she said, what do you think I should do? I said, well, I think you should leave him. And she said, well, if you need a scripture, Paul said a man that won't work for his family is worse than an infidel. So, you know, at least, if nothing else, until he finds something, if those are his kids, or even if they're just your kids and he's married to you, if he's not doing anything, then I think you should leave him. Well, buddy, he was at my office that afternoon. By God, I want to know why you told my wife to leave me. He's wanting to fight me. I said, well, I'm sorry, but according to your wife, I said, you can tell me your side to it, but according to your wife, you don't do anything. She supports y'all, which she's even okay with that if you will just help her out with the kids. And he said, man, I'm disabled. I can't do anything. My back hurts and everything. I said, do you hunt? I mean, I could tell by the camo he was wearing that he did. He said, yeah, why? I said, well, I don't know. Like, how recently have you been hunting? So I went last week. I said, like deer hunting? Yeah. I said, did you shoot anything? He said, yeah, I shot a buck. I said, so you have to get up like before day and climb up in a tree stand and carry a heavy gun. And then if you kill it, I mean, don't you have to dress it there? Isn't there like a lot of activity to that? And he said, well, yeah. I said, well, then you should be able to, if nothing else, help around the house, if you can do that. He had a job that night. And I was thanking God. My feeling back then was, I wish you would try to swing on me. Not that I think I can fight. I don't think I have to fight. Thank God this has never been tested. But I just have always felt like if I have right on my side, there's nothing you can't do. I mean, I'm right in what I'm saying. And I'm not afraid of you. Because what I'm saying is the truth. I don't know. You have got no reason to try to break up your marriage. I'm just telling you, if y'all are in love with each other, this thing is fixable. And all she is asking is that you make some effort. That's all she's asking. Fixed it. La, la, la. And you're done. All right. Let me show you what Eckhart Tolle said. Let me bring a little new age in for you. It says, unease, anxiety, tension, stress, and worry, all forms of fear are caused by too much future and not enough presence. Guilt, regret, resentment, grievances, sadness, bitterness, and all forms of non-forgiveness are caused by too much past and not enough presence. That's why I'm titling this, You Are Here. You are here. There's nothing more empowering than being in the present. Stop wasting your time regretting the past. Stop having anxiety about things in the future that may or may not happen anyway. Just being in the moment is so empowering. Let me wrap this up. This person says, I love this. I had to really think about this one for a minute, but this is one of my favorite quotes. As soon as we wish to be happier, we are no longer happy. And I really thought about that before I used it. I thought, do I believe that? And the more I meditated, I thought, no, you know what? That's absolutely the truth. As long as you think there's something better than this very moment, you're always cheating yourself. You're always thinking something better. You remember those Bacos commercials? I used to love these commercials where somebody would be eating a salad. They'd be like, oh, God, oh, the salad's so good. And somebody would say, try it with Bacos. And then you'd go, even better. I loved that concept because it's not like they were saying, this salad is the worst. But Baco fixed it. It was, oh, wow, that was even better. It was already good. That was even better. That's the way I want to live my life. I'm not waiting for anybody to make my life better. Nobody. But I'm surrounded by people that want to bless me. So when they bless me, I'm like, oh, even better. But it's always going to be good. I'm telling you, you have to go ahead and decide that now. There's no relationship that's going to make it better for you. It's like, I love my life. I would love my life if I were single because I have somebody, well, even better. I enjoy that even better with someone. But it doesn't mean I'm going to be miserable if I didn't have that. I'm telling you, so important, whatever state I find myself in, to be there with content. Sixth is by this person. She says, mindfulness is the aware, balanced acceptance of the present experience. It isn't more complicated than that. I mean, that's really everything I'm saying in a nutshell. It is opening to or receiving the present moment, pleasant or unpleasant, capital joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing, or that you may be whole. You are here. It is opening to or receiving the present moment, pleasant or unpleasant, just as it is, without either clinging to it or rejecting it. Those of you that are parents, you remember changing diapers? You remember being up in the middle of the night with babies that won't go to sleep and you're sleep deprived? That was not fun, right? But when you think back to having your babies, what do you think? Oh, they were so cute. Does that mean you want to go back and change diapers? Heck no. But while you were there doing that, it was the current experience and you dealt with it. And now you look back with fondness, but you're also glad. Like, I never understood parents that didn't like their kids growing up. I honestly loved every stage my kids were in. Even as recently as yesterday, I was hearing about a couple of them that are dealing with certain things that are maybe doing things a little differently than I would. And I just thought, well, you know what? They're grown-ups, so I guess they've got to figure it out. They're not asking me to fix it. And it was, like, really good. Like, I'm here if you need me. I'm here if you need me. But y'all got to figure out some stuff, too. It's good. I was happy when my kids learned how to drive. And I thought, you mean I don't have to chauffeur you everywhere? Yay, driving rocks. And people say, I just wish they could stay small. No, I loved when they were small. It was great. I remember one time I got one of these books, Where to Take Your Kids in Atlanta. Big, thick book, like kid-friendly place. There wasn't one place in that book I had not taken all four of my kids. And most of them I've taken my granddaughters to. And they all live in the community where I always took them to places. I mean, it took But I enjoy with granddaughters now, but they will grow up and Poppy will be at their weddings and I'll be at their graduations, whatever. I will enjoy every phase of it. Amen. One last thing by Jack Kornfield. I like this quote. We'll end with this. In the end, just three things matter: how well we have lived, how well we have loved, and how well we have learned to let go, which means being whole. I've got to let go of the past. I've even got to let go of the future. I've got to live in the now. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of Jesus, but Jesus said it this way: give us this day our daily bread. Last night I talked to my mom. My mom's just been diagnosed with Parkinson's, and it's been a challenge for her. She's doing much better. The meds and the prayers are definitely kicking in. She got an extra cycle. The exercises work. I mean, it's definitely moved her in a positive direction. Last Sunday night, we went over there. We're going over there tonight, but last Sunday night, it was the most like her I've seen her in months, where her motor skills seemed to be, but she seemed like her. So that was great, and I can tell she's taking some ownership of it, whatever. Last night, she said, do you think this ever goes into remission, or, am I crazy just believing I can be healed? I said, well, don't ever rule out the possibility of being healed. I'll always hope against hope. I said, but in the meantime, just be in today. If you had a good day, then that's what you need to concentrate on, not am I going to get over this? It's like, well, I got through today, and it was good, and I did something I couldn't do yesterday. And she said, you know what? You're exactly right. I said, give us this day our daily bread. And I believe that about all of us. We're all going through things that we can think, how's this going to work? What's going to happen when they die, or when they do this, or am I going to have enough money, whatever. Stop it. Prepare for the future. I'm not saying you don't prepare in ways that are prudent. But living in the now, learning to let go, and just enjoy it for what it is. Not, oh, it could have been so much better if so-and-so. No. Just one more thing let me say. I was having this conversation with Judy yesterday, and we were talking about people with insecurity. I said, let me tell you what. Insecurity is such a complete waste of time, and we all deal with it on some level, but it's just a waste of time. Most of the things that people are insecure about, they're fine. You know what I mean? You could lose a few pounds, or you could do this, or you could do that, or whatever. Fine, then maximize your potential. But in the meantime, just... you're fine. My artwork's fine. I'm not expecting the Metropolitan Museum of Art to commission. It is what it is. But it's fine. I'll paint and I'll love it, and some people will buy some stuff and I'll have a good time. It's fine. I don't need to qualify it. I don't really know how to do it. That matters. Shut up. It's fine. Can I give him the... sure. Send him the picture. It's fine. You're fine. You look fine. Your car is fine. Stop apologizing. Your house is fine. It's fine. Most people aren't even... I got to shut up. Most people aren't even going to notice what you think is negative if you don't bring it up. I have gone to people's houses before that spent the entire time telling me what they didn't like about the house. I'm like, I wouldn't have even noticed that if you hadn't said it. Your place is fine. Like, it's fine. You're fine. Some people hate the word fine. Fine is good. You're fine. Let go. Stand up. You're fine. Was this the greatest sermon I ever preached? I don't know. It's fine. It was what it was. It was what it was. It's fine. I did my thing. Please remain standing. I'm going to run this because... run this. If y'all got,
contributing to Metron
money.
Is quick and easy.
Quick
simply
and easy.
Text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number.
Anytime.
You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive.
It links.
Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then my online donation.
Online donation.
When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month.
Wounded Warriors.
Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, make it to JESM. And if you didn't give in the last 17 weeks that we didn't have Metron, get caught up today. I would appreciate it. You're blessed. You're whole. Good things are happening to you. The Lord has perfected that which concerns you. But also, you have dominion in your life. Yes, we love God. Yes, we believe in a higher power. But also understand God's given you power. So make your day great. Make your day count. Carpe diem. Seize the day. Be thankful for what you have. Whatever needs to get better will get better in direct proportion to how thankful you are. So be blessed. I bless those of you that have a holiday tomorrow. I say that it's a blessed holiday. And you wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace. I love you.